Just spoke about Pesel Micha, and did he speak about what happened right after Pesel Micha, the attack on Laish? No. He
spoke about the attack for about 45 minutes, and then he got to Pesel Micha.
Ah.
Barely.
Okay. So then I'll spend a few minutes on Pesel Micha and what happened with Laish, because I think it's a very important background to what we're discussing today. Sefer Shoftim ends in a rather miserable way. It's probably the most depressing ending of any Sefer in Tanakh. Things start out in Sefer Shoftim not so good, and they get much worse. It's not so clear chronologically whether the end of Sefer Shoftim happened at the end of the period of the Shoftim, chronologically, but clearly Shmuel Hanavi, who is the author of Sefer Shoftim, wanted to end with disastrous, horrific stories. And I cannot think of a more horrific story than Pilagesh B'Giva, which we'll be discussing today.
That's how Malachim ends.
Huh?
The Korban. That's pretty depressing.
It's on par. It's on par.
All right.
Okay, we'll see what I mean in a second. But before we get to Pilagesh B'Giva, we have to know what happens before that. So Pesel Micha, I guess Ramachla spoke about it a little bit, exemplifies the fact that basically Am Yisrael at the time was total anarchy. Okay, no one was calling the shots. There was no way of enforcing any particular spiritual direction, political direction, societal direction. Anyone did whatever they wanted, right? So Micha is this guy. He happens to have the silver idol. He turns into a religious tourist attraction. And all of a sudden, the Mishkan, the real Mishkan in the Shomron, has a competitor, right? And this competitor is the house of Micha. He has his own priest, and suddenly people feel like they can worship God either at the Mishkan or they can worship God in the Beit Elokim that Micha built. It's important to stress this is not worshipping another god. It's worshipping Hashem, but it's avodah zarah. It's using an idol as that as the focal point. Not only does he have a separate idol, but he makes an ephod. What's an ephod?
Not like a chest plate.
The chest plate is what the Kohen wore with the Choshen Mishpat and the Urim V'Tumim on it. What's it used for?
Talk to Hashem.
It's used to talk to Hashem, especially before you fight a war, right? You go to the Kohen, the Kohen Gadol, and he has the Urim V'Tumim, which is the Shem Hashem with the Choshen Mishpat, and you can consult with God and ask whether the war will be successful, exactly what the strategy you should take. So it turns out that Shevet Dan is wandering around Eretz Yisrael, wondering where they should live. Why are they wondering where they should live? Isn't it obvious where they should live? They should live in the Nachala of Dan. Why don't they live in the Nachala of Dan? Because Am Yisrael, when they entered Eretz Yisrael, what was their mission? Mission was to conquer. Their mission was to first offer peace to all the people living there and have them accept the Shevet Zvei Noach and accept Israeli sovereignty. And if not, to drive them out or to destroy them. Am Yisrael failed to do so. And what happened was that the initial conquerings, the initial conquests of Eretz Yisrael were done. And then those tribes that succeeded in conquesting, they relaxed. They were like, okay, we've taken care of our territory, and they weren't interested in fighting any more wars. So some of the Shvatim were shafted and were left, even much, you know, much later on, without anywhere to live. So Shevet Dan is wandering around, wondering where they should live. And they see a beautiful piece of real estate. It's the Canaanite city of Laish. Now Laish, I'm not going to read this inside because it's not really our topic, but Laish, the Navi stresses over and over again, was a peaceful city. Was a city that basically didn't have any army to speak of because they didn't pick fights. They weren't interested in fighting wars. The Navi is hinting to us that if Am Yisrael had followed halacha, which is that before you fight against a Canaanite city, you have to offer peace. They had offered peace. The Navi is indicating that they probably would have accepted it. Okay. Now, the only one downside of offering peace to a Canaanite city. What's the downside?
You don't get all the land.
You don't get their houses, right? Because they're still alive, right? So Shevet Dan goes to the house of Micha and consults with the ephod of Micha, right? This is the hoax, the false ephod. And Micha, as the prophet, or I'm sorry, the Levi that works as his Kohen, says, oh yeah, God says, you know, go in and win. So they go in and they slaughter the people of Laish. They slaughter the people of Laish without offering peace first. They take their land. Okay, this is the background of what happens with Peleg Eshvegiva. Okay, before we even get into Peleg Eshvegiva, can anyone chart out what it seems like Am Yisrael is up to?
No good.
No good. Okay, they put very, very nicely. Thank you.
Well, it can't be.
The big three.
Sovereign ruler.
Huh?
They don't have any sovereign ruler. They can't be possibly doing anything.
Okay,
well.
Right. And this is the mantra throughout Sefer Shoftim is Ein Melech B'Yisrael. There was no king. V'ish asher yashar ve'inav yaseh. And every single person did exactly what he felt like.
That is
anarchy in a nutshell. Okay? So Micha, he feels like starting his own little cult. He starts his own little cult. There's no one there to say not to. Right? And the Navi stresses that this cult lasted for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Okay? This was a well-established religion. Throughout the time of through over hundreds of years. Next, Shvichus Damim, right? So you have Avodah Zarah, you have Shvichus Damim, right? Going to a Canaanite city that probably would have accepted peace, failing to offer peace, and slaughtering them, right? Shvichus Damim, right?
That's
murder.
Laish.
Huh?
That's Laish.
Laish, yeah.
I was on the city of Laish. Shvichus Damim means...
spilling blood. Spilling murder.
Blood.
Okay? And finally, we get to Peleg Eshvegiva. And really, Peleg Eshvegiva is the worst of them all. I want to read the Peleg Eshvegiva story with you carefully, because if you read it carefully, you'll realize that the way the story is told itself is meant to be a very powerful message. Okay, so open up to Perek Yud Tet of Sefer Shoftim, the very end of the Sefer. And it tells a story. The story begins sounding like a beautiful love story. Vayhi b'yamim ahem, u'melech ein b'Yisrael, right? So don't forget, right? The Navi does not want us to forget for a second, melech ein b'Yisrael. Vayhi ish levi gar b'yarkate har Ephraim, vayikach lo isha pilagesh mi beit lechem Yehuda. Geography matters here. Okay, where is it? Where's har Ephraim? Right, this is Ephraim, right? Right over here. So he lives somewhere in the region of Ephraim. And he takes for himself a pilegesh. What's a pilegesh?
Concubine.
What's a concubine? A concubine is a woman that you have a fixed, established relationship with, but you haven't married. Right? What's the difference? The difference is that you don't owe her a ketubah. Right? She's not protected. It's not a mutual relationship. Right? Kind of like you get benefits from her, but you don't owe her anything. Right? You feed her while the relationship lasts. But would you take care of her while it should last? But if the relationship ends, there's no protection.
That's cool.
It's a debate amongst the Rishonim whether it was ever okay for normal Jews to do. I think the Rabbit holds that only a Melech could have a concubine. Other Rishonim seem to hold that within certain limits.
Rather want a concubine than a queen, than a king getting married, because then all the people would want to be queens, and then two might be too powerful, I guess.
Right. So, here's Beit Lechem. Okay? In the modern Israel, where's Beit Lechem in relation to Yerushalayim?
Not too far away.
It's directly south of Yerushalayim, right? So this is Beit Lechem, here's Yerushalayim. Okay, we'll see if this geography really matters. Beit Lechem, Yerushalayim. We'll see Givah. This is Givah that we'll get into in a second. And here's our time. Okay, so for some reason, he lives up here, but he marries a woman, he has a concubine from Beit Lechem. Okay? So, he has this pilagesh. Vatizne alav pilagsho. This concubine basically runs away. She runs away from him. Vatelech me'ito el beit aviha. And she goes from his house to the house of her father. And she stays there for 4 months. Why would a Pilagish run away from her master or her husband and go back to her father? Huh?
Doesn't like him anymore.
Okay, she doesn't like him.
Why not forever then? She doesn't like him. She doesn't like him and the relationship and run, you know. So she can't do that, but
the guy can chase after
you. It just seems, I don't know, 4 months just seems weird. Like,
something's going wrong in the relationship, right? What it is, it's not clear. But something's off. Okay, and the fact that she goes back to her father, right, is significant. Apparently what's happening is that the relationship between her and this man didn't fully take, she still feels closer to her father than to this guy. Right? In some level, this is important, we'll see, there's a reversal of what the Torah describes as the ideal relationship between a man and a woman. Right? What does the Torah say in Bereishit? Alken Yazov. Anyone? Alken Yazov Ish et Aviv et Imo. A man will leave his father and his mother, v'davak b'ishto, and he will connect himself to his wife. Right, that's the ideal. The ideal is that a person should, at some point, individuate and separate from his parents and connect to his wife. Right, here we see the reversal of that. She leaves her man and goes back to her father. Okay, keep that in mind. We'll see that it's actually very relevant. Okay, so she runs away and she goes to her father's house. Pasuk Gimel v'yakam isha v'yelech acharel l'daber aliba l'hashiva. Beautiful. So the man, he misses her. It's his beloved Pilegesh. So he gets up to chase after her, not to drag her back by the hair, l'daber aliba, to speak to her heart. He brings a box of candy, some flowers, right? He wants to woo her back to Har Ephraim. It brings along, you know, enough stuff for the road. The father of the concubine is delighted to see her man, right? And he welcomes him in with open arms. And we see that this is a glorious reunion. He stays with his father-in-law, so to speak, for 3 days. Right? They eat, they drink, they make merry. The man gets up. It's been wonderful seeing you, Pops. Thanks for the great food. It's time to go back home to Har Ephraim. I'm going to take your daughter with me. Vayomer avi anara achatano sa'ad libcha pat lechem v'achar teleichu. Have one for the road. And have one more, you know, my wife's delicious cakes, and then you can go on your way. Vayeshvu vayochlu shnehem yachtav vayishtu. They sat and they ate and they drank. Vayomer avi anara laish hoel na avelin v'yitav libecha. Stay one more night and enjoy yourself. What's he trying to do?
Make him stay?
Yeah, he's trying to, like, he can't part. He can't separate. It's not just that his daughter can't separate from her father, but it seems like he can't separate from his daughter either. Right? He can't let go. Is that clear? Yeah? Okay. Vayaka ma'ish lelechet was once again. He gets up to leave. Vayiftzarbo. He pleads with him. I want you to remember. Does anyone remember where this word appears elsewhere in Tanakh? Vayiftzarbo.
Abraham
Dasha. Nope. Okay. We'll see. We'll see soon. We're going to see a lot of parallels in terms of the terms that this parak uses.
What is Vayitzarbo?
He pleads with him. Vayitzarbo chotno vayashav yelento. So finally, the son-in-law gives in and he stays for 4th day. If you have to choose a mitzvah that's happening right now, what's the mitzvah? Hachnasat Orchim. He's being that's also a parallel to this, right? But here we see, at least on the surface, what's happening is he loves his son-in-law, he loves his daughter. He's being incredibly welcoming. He's giving him lots of food.
He's not doing it as Hachnasat
Orchim.
He's doing it.
But we don't know what's going on in his head.
Right,
it's hard to know what's going on in his head. However, we're going to see something goes wrong. Okay. So on the 5th day, he gets up and you know, he's really ready to go.
With the girls, he's ready to go?
Yeah. He says, please, just eat some more. And they tarry, they sort of like, time drags out until the day begins to turn, until about noon. And they ate. And now the man gets up to go. Fatal mistake. What's wrong with what he's about to do?
It's really hot.
It's hot to travel during noon, or something else that's even worse than that? Why don't you get up to go to travel at noon if you're traveling between Beit Lechem and Har Ephraim?
Probably at night.
soon. Because you're not going to make it anywhere by nightfall. Okay? If he had left at dawn, which is when travelers would get up and leave, then he would have made it to his destination by nightfall. In the Wild West, you don't travel at night because it's anarchy out there. There's no one controlling the roads. That's the situation here in Eretz Yisrael at the time. There was no melech. There was no soldiers. There was no police force. Right? With the moment the sun sets, you are anybody's fair game. Right? So, usually disaster is composed of multiple small mistakes. This is big mistake number one. Okay? In one sense, everything that's about to happen is the result of distorted hachnasas orchim. Do you follow? What are the three components of hachnasas orchim? It's called eshel, right? Avraham did eshel. What's eshel? Achila, shtia, v'levia. What's levia? Levia is escorting the person out to make sure he goes on the journey safely. Right? Failure of levia here, right? The father can't let go, and he makes the guy stay until noon, right? Fatal mistake. Okay, we're going to see what happens in a second. So, the day's already slipping away. Stay here again. He was like, Dad, sorry, I'm going. I'm not going to stay another night. ויקם וילך ויבוא עד נוכח יבוס ירושלים ועמו צמן חמרים חבושים ופלגשו עמו. They get as far as they leave Beit Lechem and they get as far as Yerushalayim. Okay, it's not so far. Right? And it's already, the sun is already getting ready to set. Okay, they have a long way to go until they get to the Har Ephraim. So Yud Aleph, Heim im Yavus vayom rad me'od. The sun's setting. So the servant says to his master, "Lochana, v'nasura el ira Yevusi azot." But I see there's a motel on the, you know, in the city of Yevus, and there's a vacancy sign up. But let's turn in for the night. So this is a key line in this story. Pasuk Yudbet, "Vayomer elav Adonav, lo nasura el ir nochri." Let's not sleep in a non-Jewish city. They're not Jews. Let's continue going on this path until we get to Giva. What does this man assume about his fellow Jews?
Jews aren't hostile.
Yeah, that it's much safer to be with Jews than to be with non-Jews. Okay, this is going to be one of the tragic ironies of the story. Okay, this is mistake number two.
I mean, that's not really like a mistake.
It's a safe assumption.
Yeah, so it ended up not really working out, but that's not really a mistake on his part.
Well, it depends on how you assess the overall state of Bnei Israel at the time. Let's continue on. We'll see how Am Yisrael as a whole is doing. Let's go find a Jewish city up ahead, either Giva or Ramah. And it turns out they get to Giva, and the sun is mamish setting when they get to Giva. Pasuk Tedvav, Vayasuru Sham, Lavo, Lalun, Bagiva. They go into the city of Giva to dwell, to sleep. Vayavo, Vayeshev, Birchov, Ha'ir, Ve'en Ish, Me'asefotam, Abaita. They find themselves sitting there in the middle of the deserted streets, and no one invites them into their house to sleep. Okay, so what's happening?
They're not welcome,
right? No one's interested in Hachnasas Orchim. No one's interested in bringing them in. Can we remember any other story in Tanakh that reminds of this scene?
In Stone.
Lod and Stone, right? What happens? The Malachim come to visit Stone, and let's flip back. Ironically, it's Sefer Breishit, Perek Yotet.
Is that what that word is used?
Vayiftzar, yes, yeah. Yes. Okay, so let's look at
the rest of the story. Also like that.
Sorry,
I was thinking the rest of the story is also like by Lod, it's Stone.
The Breslov story.
I said the rest of the story.
Oh, the rest of the story. Yeah. Okay, yes, 100%. Okay, so the beginning of Perek Yud Tet in Bereishit. Right, v'yavohu shnei malachim stoma v'erev alot yoshev v'shar stoma v'yar lot v'yakam mikrata mishtachu apay ma'arza. V'yomer hinena Adonai suru na al beit avdechem v'linu v'rachatzu raglechem v'yishkamtem v'alachtem l'darkechem v'yomru lo kibarchu kibarchov melin. It's actually the exact opposite of Sodom, right? In Sodom, the Malachim said, no, we'd rather sleep in the street. Okay? Here, clearly, this man is sitting there in the middle of the street. He's like, isn't someone going to invite me in? He wants an invitation. Okay? What's the next line? Vayiftzar ba me'od. Lot begs them. He pleads with them. Please come to my house. Right? That's the word we saw before. Right? That's in the case of the father who tries to plead with him to stay with him. Okay, now keep your finger on Bereishit. Let's go back to Shoftim for a second, and we'll flip back and forth to see the parallels here. We'll have to think about what the parallels mean. So where are we? So we are. Pasuk Tetzayin. There's an old man who came in from his work in the field. It just so happens that this guy is from this Levi's hometown. They're both from Har Ephraim. He's a transplant. He moved to Giva to live. And everyone else who lived in Giva was from Shevet Binyamin. Now pay close attention to what happens now. If you were Rav Machlis, what would you say to them? Okay, let's see what he says. Where are you going and from where are you coming? Right, we're going from Beit Lechem to Har Ephraim because that's where I'm from. Va'elech ad Beit Lechem Yehuda ve'ad Beit Hashem ani holech, I'm going to worship in the house of God. Ve'ein, he points out, ve'ein ish me'asefo tiyah baita. I'm shocked. No one's invited me into their house. Right? His expectations are totally disappointed. And then he goes on, he says, what's he hinting at here?
He wants the old guy to take him.
Right, so usually people with a decent sense of social cues, like when someone says, it's kind of strange, like no one's invited me over. That's that point where you cut them off and say, oh, please come to my house, right? Nothing. He keeps on going. So what does he say next? Maybe this will up the chances of being invited over. The gam tevin gam yispo yesh lechem. Don't worry, and I have enough straw and food for my animals. The gam lechem yayin yeshli, and I also have bread and wine. Right? What's he trying to say? I'm not going to eat you out of house and home. I'm not going to be a burden on you. But can you please invite me over? Right? This is the only person in the whole town that has said anything to them. It happens to be that he isn't even a native of the town. And even he doesn't get the hint that you're supposed to, the polite thing to do when someone tells you it's strange that no one's invited me over, is to invite him over. Right? Finally, in Pasukhaf, Vayomer Aish Azaken, Shalom Lach. Rak Komach Sorcha Alai, Rak Barchov Al Talan. So finally, he gets the point and he says, I'll feed you, come into my house, don't sleep in the middle of the street. Okay? So we see that this is the reverse of what happened in Sodom, right? In Sodom, they didn't want to come to Lot's house. Lot pleaded with them until they came.
Okay? Can't you just sleep in someone's backyard, though? It still wouldn't be too safe.
I don't know the layout of the city. Okay. So what happens? They come into the house, they eat, they drink. Pasuchav bet. Hema meitivim et libam. They were having a merry old time. V'hinei anshei ha'ir anshei b'nei blial nasabu et habayit. That the people of the city, wicked people, surrounded the house. Mit dapkim al adelet. Open up. Vayomru al ha'ish b'al ha'bayit hazakein limor. Hotzei et ha'ish asher ba'al beitcha v'neda henu. Send out the man that's staying at your house so we can know him. And it's not...
in the biblical sense.
20 questions we're talking about. They want to rape him.
Why didn't they just invite him right away?
That's a great question. It's a great question, and I think it actually, I think the answer is also a good answer, which is that they don't, it's not a sexual, rape usually is not a sexual act. Rape is usually an act of power, right? It's an act of showing who's dominant and who's forced to be submissive. It's usually classified, like a man raping a woman is usually considered to be an act of violence, okay? Rape is really, if you think about it, is the diametric opposite of haknas orchim. Why? What haknas orchim is being willing to lower some of your boundaries to welcome someone else into your space. You follow? Right? Rape is forcing your presence into someone else's space. You follow? Right? So it's literally the diametric opposite. Their desire to rape this guy is a desire to show their anger at feeling intruded upon by a stranger. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then how did the old guy that brought him in, so he wasn't like a native of the town, so why didn't...
That's a great question. Someone asked me that yesterday. I don't have a good answer. I think it's probably a very important part of the story. I don't know
why
how to fit
in.
How can he be there if they're so opposed to strangers? Well, I don't think it answers.
Huh? How did he even?
Small town, word spreads. Okay, so they make this demand. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayitze alehem aish bala bayit vayomer alehem alachai al tareyuna acharei asher ba aish hazeh el beiti al tasu et hanivala hazot. Right? Don't be so wicked. Don't be so bad. Don't do this disgraceful act after this man is, after all, protected by my house. Instead, rape my daughter.
Instead, oh my God.
So I have this gorgeous virgin daughter, and I'll throw in his concubine as well. Otsia naotam, vanu otam. Rape them. And do whatever you want with them. Don't do this disgraceful thing to this man.
How can you possibly justify that?
You can't.
You can't.
So it's very similar to Lot, 100%. And there's no question that Shmuel wants us to see the similarities that Lot did.
Yeah.
Right? When the people were trying to bang down the door to rape the Malachim. So he said, I'll send out my daughters. And the Malachim say, shut the heck up, and they close the door before he has a chance to do that. Right? Let's stop for a second. Let's ask ourselves what's going on here. What's going on here is a generation where all the relationships that we see taking place are completely and totally distorted. Okay? We see a man, right, who has a pilagesh. Pilagesh relationship is already a little bit off, right? It's not balanced, it's not mutual, there's no protection of the woman, right? This woman feels more connected to her father than to her husband. That's a little bit off. We see the father unable to let go of his daughter, right? It's a little bit off. We now see a man who has the reverse problem. If the first father couldn't let go of his daughter, this guy views his daughter as like bait, right?
Why did he care for
it? It was the father-daughter relationship in both situations is totally off, right? Here he values a total stranger he didn't even know 4 hours ago. He values his life over his daughter's life, right? Every relationship that we see so far is completely distorted, okay? And what I want to suggest is that what the Navi is doing, we haven't gotten to the climax of the story yet, but what the Navi is doing is he's taking a microcosm. He's taking one particular incident and showing that this is reflective of the state of Am Yisrael as a whole.
Right.
Okay? In other words, in a generation when the relationships between the groups within society as a whole are off, you're going to see that as well in the relationships between individual people. It makes sense? Where the whole structure of society is skewed, and that makes its way into every single family as well. Okay? Yeah.
How did that come about? I mean, the Israelites, they just caught me. I don't know how many years it's been, but it's relatively close to the time that they entered Eretz Israel, and Yeshua was their leader, and they weren't so far off from Moshe because.
So the Navi doesn't hide the information. The Navi tells us over and over and over again. Why is it?
No king.
Ein Melech b'Yisrael ve'ish asher yashar b'nav yaseh. Right? There's no overall structure. What's a Melech? A Melech is not just a person. It's an orientation of society. It's society saying that we have a center. We have one unified sort of system of making decisions, and that enables the entire system to work.
Doesn't mean Melech. Right? Kingness.
It could be a government. It could be a government as well. Right? There was nothing here.
They didn't have any governing power. Means that you can do whatever you want, and no one's going to say anything because there's no higher authority to report to.
Correct. Right. So, and what happens is that it might start with society as a whole, but it ends up being every single family just falls apart. But there's nothing holding the whole society together. Okay. We're going to see many, many more indications of that in a second.
If Hashem knew this was going to happen, then why not just say, okay, when you get into Eretz Yisrael, you need to establish a king for yourself?
According to the Rambam, he does. That's the Machlokas Rambam versus other Mefarshim, but according to the Rambam, Som Tassim Alecha Melech, the first thing Am Yisrael has to do when they enter Eretz Yisrael is appoint a king.
And then Hashem was angry at them.
Right. Huh?
Then Hashem was angry at them.
So this is a very important question that you're pointing out right now. Who wrote Sefer Shoftim? Shmuel. Who is furious when Am Yisrael asks for a king? Shmuel. So you have to reconcile those two things. You follow? And Shmuel writes over and over again in Sefer Shoftim, Ein Melech Yisrael, Ein Melech Yisrael, Ein Melech Yisrael. That's the problem. And yet, when they ask for a king, he's furious. Why? Maybe it's because they're asking for a king for the wrong reasons. Maybe it's because... It's because the issue in Shoftim is not that they didn't have a king with a crown; they didn't have any government at all. And maybe a different kind of government would have been better.
Well, could it also be maybe a mindset that they had no king? It doesn't have to be literally that they had no king, but that they felt like they could just do whatever they wanted.
Yeah,
so that's just
right.
The whole mindset of.
Totally, it could have been a democracy. It could have been some other system, but like there was no system at all.
Right. So what Shmuel's saying is, I guess, why he's mad is when he's saying here that they have no king is because. They'll just do whatever they want, and they don't care. And when they ask for a king, and he gets mad, is because they really shouldn't need like a king to tell them like yes or no. I guess like I don't know a better way to say it than like an internal king. So you know for yourself was right.
I think it's definitely part of it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So what's going on with the Mishkan?
So the Mishkan's there. Mishkan.
It's
hanging out, and it's a little bit in competition now with Pesel Micha, but it's there. And we see that the Levi he tells them, I'm heading to Beit Hashem, right? But he plans on going back there to serve. We'll see that the Mishkan comes back into play in this story in a few minutes. Just because of time, I want to move on. One other major flaw that's going on in Bnei Yisrael all the time was they failed to appoint a king. What else did they fail to do?
Conquer all of
them. They failed to conquer Eretz Yisrael. The Torah stresses just over and over again, do not fail in this realm. Why? What's going to happen if you do? You're going to learn from those people. Right? Whereas the two options are they have to either become Bnei Noach, in which case they've abandoned Avodah Zarah and other kinds of immorality, or you are going to imitate them. Okay? We're going to see that not only do they imitate them, but Bnei Yisrael become far worse than the Canaanites. Okay, we're going to see an episode in a second, which is just absolutely horrific.
Because of rebellion,
huh?
Because of rebellion against their own sense.
Let's find out. So what happens? So this guy says, don't rape my male guest, rape my female guest, rape my daughter. So pasuk chafei, the lo avu anashim lishmo alo. The people of the town were not interested in that offer, right? We're not interested in pretty girls. Vayachazek. By the way, these are Jews. That's another major difference between Stone and this story. That these are Jews.
They're violating the Torah directly.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
I don't think they
care. Ish asher yashar ve'inav yaseh. No one was running the show.
I have a strong feeling that they didn't really care.
V'lo avu anashim yishmo lo v'chazek ha'ish v'pilyak show. So they didn't want to listen. They were still trying to bang down the door. So like a good master to a concubine, he picks her up and chucks her outside to the dogs. Right? So maybe just bite him off. Huh?
Who did that?
The husband, the man.
I guess. Yeah, because I was going to ask the one of the men.
He figures maybe this will work.
Right? The door.
So he sends her out.
Is there any difference that he throws the concubine out instead of his own daughter?
Well, no. It was the husband. The husband picks her up.
And the husband.
Yeah.
It was really good in like winning her back.
Vayotze aleihem achutz, vayedu ota vitaluba kol halayla ad haboker. And they rape her all night long. Vayshalchuha kalot hashachar. And they discard her at dawn.
Top shoppers.
Yeah. Vatavo aisha lifnot haboker. And the woman comes at morning. Vatipol petach beit ha'ish asher adonai sham ad ha'or. And she collapsed at the entrance to the house that our master is staying in. Now this is horrible. Vayakam Adonai baboker. Her master got up in the morning. What does that imply?
He slept through the night.
Vayiftach daltot habayit. He opened the doors of the house. Vayetze lelechad ledarko. And he went out in order to go on his way. What should he have been doing?
Looking for her?
Yeah. Vinei haisha pilegsho nofelet petach habayit v'yadei al asaf. He sees his pilegesh, his beloved pilegesh, lying there,
it seems like
unconscious, with her hand like touching the doorstep.
Usually, doesn't vinei denote like some sort of like surprise?
Yeah, like, he's like, oh, well,
expecting to see her.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I'm never going to see her again, right? So she's lying there unconscious with her arm on the doorstep. Vayomer eleha, and he says to her, Kumi ben elecha. Get up, let's go. What do you mean, lazy girl? Ve'enoneh. She doesn't answer him. Vayikacha ala chamor. He picks her up and puts her on his donkey. Vayakam ha'ish vayelech limkomo. And he goes back to his hometown. Vayavo aleto. He goes to his house. Vayikach et ha'ma'achalet. Takes a carving knife. Vayachazek b'pilagsho. He grabs hold of his concubine. Vaynatcheha la'atzameha. He cuts her up. Vishnemasar netachim. 12 pieces. It's not clear. Vayishalcheha b'chol gvul Yisrael. And he sends the pieces to all the different regions around Israel.
Is there like a why? Because it really doesn't sound like there's a good reason.
Okay, what could he be thinking?
How do you justify that?
I think
it's a strong political statement. If someone sees a body piece, if a politician sees a body piece at his doorstep, not that there were politicians, but there were leaders of the Shvatim.
Okay.
And so let's say I'm going to use the word politician, like for America, if someone saw a body part at their doorstep, I'm pretty sure they would do something about it. So
but what's it? What's he bothered? What's he upset about? Is that a normal response for a person whose loved one was just raped and killed to cut her up in pieces and send her pieces?
Maybe it's to send a message to any kind of
that what
body.
Though?
Any kind, if there was one, that it's time that we step up because something bad has happened, and it's time.
But what's bad? What's he upset about?
Part at all.
What's bad is that
I don't understand why he's mad.
We're really
people
confused.
Aren't in control of what they're doing. They're not controlling, you know, what's going on in their cities. They don't seem
right.
to care if there's any kind of.
So you're saying that I want better police. That's what he's saying.
I want some sort of protection. I want some sort of sovereignty.
So then, but then okay. that doesn't justify that. Then why would he just throw her out?
Yeah,
and then not expect ever see it? It makes no sense.
And clearly, he sees her as a piece of meat.
His thought process is somewhat flawed.
Yes.
What his motives are, totally.
So then it doesn't accomplish anything, because whatever you're going to say the motives are for this, it's also messed up.
That's also kind of
strange. The story is messed up.
It makes no sense.
His thought process is so screwed up that anything could possibly,
All right, so it's hard to know what was going. It's hard to know what was going through his mind. We do know how people responded when they saw it. Okay, the Navi does tell us that. So what does it say? It says pasuk lamed v'haya kol haro'eh v'amar lo niata v'lo nirata kazot miyom alot b'nei Yisrael me'erek mitzrayim ad hayom hazeh. We've never seen anything as horrific as this since we entered Eretz Yisrael. Simu lachem aleha utsu v'daberu. We have to talk. We have to get together and have a conference because this can't go on. We've reached a new low.
So it worked.
So it did something. Let's find out.
How would they know what this was all about, though?
We're not really sure what his plan was.
I'm not sure.
So now let's read.
We have
10 minutes. We have to move. Okay. Pasuk Aleph. How does Am Yisrael respond? Pay attention to the words here and tell me what it reminds you of. Next pasuk, v'yitzavu pinot kol ha'am kol shivtei Yisrael bikal am Elohim arba miot elef ish ragli sholev charev. What do these words remind you of? V'yitzavu kol ha'am v'tikahel ha'ida. Ki ish echad. What does this remind us of?
Har Sinai.
Matan Torah.
Yatzvu
Ru'u. Yeah, but you also have to get saved. Ha'am.
It came to mind when I saw the word.
Yeah.
What's Vatikvu?
Is this also
Vatika Hel, right? Yom HaKahal.
It's the first time since the times of Yoshua that the entire nation.
Yeah, yeah. We suddenly see unity.
They have their own way of doing.
Right.
Things.
So we suddenly see unity on the part of Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael becomes a kahal. Am Yisrael becomes an eidah. Right. They're gathered together for the first time in a long time, but not to fight against the Canaanites, which was what they were supposed to get together for, to fight against fellow Jews. Okay. So there's a tremendous amount of irony and tragedy here, but they get together, and they go to Shev Binyamin, and they say, "What the heck happened? Turn over those people, Giva." Right? And what do they say?
I have a question.
We didn't focus because of time. Ask me afterwards. I wish I had more time. We'd spend on the fact that the husband of the Pilegesh lies through his teeth about what happened. But what's interesting is, if you look at Pasuk Vav, he says, Ki asu zima unvala b'Yisrael, that a horrific act was done to Am Yisrael. This is not a private crime. This is a crime against, people say crime against humanity now, it's a crime against our nation. Pasuk Zayin, Hine kuchem b'nei Yisrael, havu lachem davar be'itzalom. He says, b'nei Yisrael as a whole, we have to do something now. Pasuk Chet, v'yakam kol ha'am ki ish echad le'mor lo ne'lech ish lo alo, that no one's going home until we've solved this problem. And finally, Pasuk Yer Aleph, v'yayasef kol ish Yisrael alayir ki ish echad chaverim. The Am Yisrael is bound together as friends in response to this horrible act. But what do they do? So they say to Binyamin, send over these people, but Binyamin refuses. Binyamin refuses, and Am Yisrael decides, okay, then it's time to fight. And they gather together all their soldiers. Binyamin apparently had very ferocious soldiers as well. Am Yisrael goes back to the Mishkan, and they consult with the real Urim Tumim. Okay, with the real Urim Tumim, and they ask who should go to fight first. What question do they forget to ask? Should we fight? Should we fight? They say, who should go to fight first? And Hashem says, Yehuda. And they launch an all-out attack. And Binyamin slaughters tens of thousands of Israelite soldiers. They're totally shocked out of their minds. They go back to the Mishkan one more time, and they ask again, should we fight again? And Hashem says, yeah, fight again. They go back, and Binyamin slaughters them again. Okay? And finally, they go back one last time, and they say, should we really fight again? And Hashem says, yes, this time I'm gonna let you be successful. And this time they launch an all-out attack, they have an ambush, etc., and they completely annihilate Shevet Binyamin, man, woman, child, property, with the exception of 600 people of Binyamin who ran away and hid. Okay? But basically they completely destroyed Shevet Binyamin. How should they respond? How should they feel the day after the battle?
Terrible.
Why do they feel terrible?
They killed people from Am Yisrael.
Okay. So let's look at their response. So it's fascinating in Pasuk Chav Gimel. So that Vayalu b'nei Yisrael v'yivku lifnei Hashem ad ha'erev. This is still before the final battle. They go to the Beit Hashem and they cry until night. Vayishalu b'Hashem lemor ha'osif lageshet lemilchama im b'nei Binyamin achi. Fascinating. They're in the middle of a civil war, right? But they still view Binyamin as their brothers, right? It's important. Okay, so finally they win the war, and what happens? Bum 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 bum. Pasuk Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Bet. You guys have it? I'm sorry, Pasuk Aleph. Let's start with Pasuk Aleph. Vayish Yisrael nishba b'mitzpah l'mor ish menenu lo yitein bito l'binyamin l'isha. Right? That all of the people involved in the war said, they took an oath, none of us will ever allow our daughters to marry someone from Binyamin again. What are they doing?
We're cutting them off.
Huh? Excommunicating them out.
Yeah, they're cutting Binyamin out of Am Yisrael, right? You can't marry anymore. You're not part of the same nation, right? And the next pasuk, their response is very different. Vayavo ha'am Beit El, vayeshvu sham ad ha'erev lifnei Elohim, vayisu kolam, vayivku b'chi gadol. They sat there in the front of the Beit Hashem and they cried and cried and cried. Vayomru lama Hashem Elohei Yisrael, haitazot b'Yisrael. Why did this happen to us? Vipaked ha'yom Yisrael, shevet achat, to have an entire tribe of Am Yisrael wiped out. Very, very tragic scene. But then they realize, did we really do this? We really just ridden off an entire Shevet? How are we going to marry off, how are we going to allow Binyamin to have children? So what do? They ask themselves, well, was there any city that failed to send soldiers for the war effort? It turns out there's a city called Yavesh Gilad that failed to send soldiers for the war effort. So they say, perfect! And they go into Yavesh Gilad and kill every single man, married woman, or male child. And they're left with 400 virgin girls and marry them off to Binyamin. Here are the girls you can marry. Now Shevet Binyamin can continue. And that's more or less how Sefer Shoftim ends. The last pasuk of Sefer Shoftim. Pasuk Chavdalid. Vayitalchu misham b'nei Yisrael ba'et ahi ish l'shivto mishpachto vayitzu misham ish l'nachlato. That everyone went back home to their own personal Shevet, their own personal family. In other words, all that unity that they had temporarily just unravels once again. Vayamim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael ish hayashar b'inav yaseh. No, and they all lived happily ever after here. Things completely and totally fell apart. Okay? It's a story of what happens when a nation fails to be a nation, when brothers fail to treat each other as brothers, when Shvatim fail to take responsibility for each other, when people put their own particular tribe's self-interest over the interests of the nation. And we see that it has ramifications not just on the national level, it has ramifications of the level of basic individual morality. It has ramifications on every level. And it's a sad story. I think that perhaps the most telling aspect of the entire thing is that what are we so upset at the people of Giva for doing? What they do was so wrong. Right? It's a failure of Hachnasas Orchim. It's the reverse of Hachnasas Orchim. What's shocking, though, is that our automatic comparison is to Stone. But Stone is nothing like this. Stone was a non-Jewish city where its total strangers happened to wander in. So what they did was horrific, but it wasn't nearly as horrific as Giva, because Giva, they were furious at the fact that their own brothers were staying there. This is not like in America, people are upset that illegal Mexican immigrants are coming through.
It's like a gang.
Right? This is not illegal immigration. These are Jews. Right? The guy decides to go to Giva as opposed to Yerushalayim because he wants to be in a Jewish city. They've turned upon each other to such a degree that they view fellow Jews as invaders, as illegal aliens, as the enemy. Right? Things have gone really, really wrong. There is a certain kind of unity that comes about in response to the tragedy, but we see that it seems to unravel. Things are not the way they should be. It's a sad story. It's a very, very sad story. I think that we should, when we read this kind of episode in Tanakh, we need to ask ourselves, are there any contemporary situations that we need to think about that might be connected? And I think the answer is yes. I think that we live in a time when there's a lot of divisions and hatred between different groups of Jews. Right? You know, whether it's over political issues, whether it's over, you know, differences in religious attitudes. And oftentimes, especially in the state of Israel, one group of Jews treats the other group of Jews as the enemy. As the enemy, as people that are the other, the foreigners, the wicked ones. And it's a serious danger. I personally know people that are planning on starting their own state of Judea. We'll do things right. The state of Israel always gets things wrong, right? We'll show them how a Jewish state is supposed to be run, right? They're willing to cut up the body of Am Yisrael into 12 pieces, right? They're willing to say that we'd rather be, you know, do our own thing than find a way to work together with people who disagree with us, right? And it's in the short term, it's always easier, right? Why cooperate? Why make compromises to work with people who you disagree with, right? Why not just separate? I read a study recently that the vast majority of Haredim and the vast majority of Chilonim would much rather not have to live in the same city together. Right? They would much rather have cities designated for Haredim and cities designated for Chilonim. I'd much rather never have to see you, right? The Haredim think the Chilonim are a bunch of heathens. The Chilonim think the Haredim are a bunch of Taliban, right? That, unfortunately, that's the direction that the country's going in. And our avoda is to find a way to bridge. Our avoda is to find a way, short of dealing with disaster, that we can begin to remember that we're achim, that we're brothers, and that united we stand, but divided we fall. It's the only way. But unfortunately, we thank God not on the level that we see here, but We still have many of the same challenges that we see in Sefer Shoftim still lurking, facing us today. Sorry that I couldn't give you a better ending. But that's...
Yeah. I don't understand why at the end when he